With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Motor Mouth Podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
We've partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure. Thanks to our partnership, we've been able to create a short series of special podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by these devastating diagnoses. You can hear these stories, including the Williams F1 team's planning director, Richard Jones, right now on your chosen podcast player. The charity work all year round to help develop research and raise awareness, and this October sees the return of the Brain Tumor Charity's most beloved community event, the Twilight Walk. You can join them remotely this autumn to cover 10 kilometres, 40 kilometres, 130 kilometres, or your very own distance to raise money and take strides towards a cure. Moving about is well known for boosting our well-being, and you can complete your walk bit by bit or all in one go, as a team or by yourself, at home or indoors. So visit www.thetwilightwalk.com to sign up and start your fundraising challenge. A huge thank you for your support. If you can donate anything, you can do that through the motormouth.club website or through the Brain Tumor Charity direct. And together, we can help every single person affected by a brain tumor. We're really excited to be once again teaming up with F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. And let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One this year, we are all over it. And the brilliant news is you can now return trackside thanks to F1 Experiences. Enjoy the very best race tickets and track hospitality, first-class hotels, and unprecedented access you simply cannot get anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when checking out online. So, what are you waiting for? Experience the 2021 F1 season firsthand with exclusive access courtesy of F1 Experiences. Get booking today at f1experiences.com.
Hello everyone, Tim Sylvie here. Now, our guest today hails from Quito in Ecuador. And did you know, Harry, that Ecuador is in fact the closest country to space? Yes, you might think of Mount Everest, but no, the Earth is not a perfect sphere and means because of its rotation, there's a slight bulge at the equator. That means that the equator is closer to space, and it also means that the bulge is big enough that Mount, apologies for my pronunciation here, Chimborazo is actually 1.5 miles higher than Everest. I bet you didn't know that.
I had no idea at all. Yeah. That's very impressive.
Me neither. That's awesome.
But, wow. but, but, Harry, first, before we introduce our Ecuadorian / American guest.
Oh, yes.
Let's test your geography skills, because you know how I like to test your geography skills. Which of the following countries does not border Ecuador? Is it A, Chile, B, Colombia, C, Peru, or D, it borders all three? And no tips, please, from our guest.
Oh. What? So Peru, Colombia, and what was
Chile.
The other one?
Chile, Colombia, and Peru. Which of those does not border Ecuador? And if you think it through, you could probably get this.
It's definitely one of them doesn't border. Is that right?
Well, it could border all three. That is option D.
I'm going to say...
you haven't Chile.
It borders all three.
Incorrect. Incorrect. I think I would have got... I mean, I obviously know the answer. I've seen the answer. But I'm not going to reveal the answer, actually, until we introduce our guest, because I want to see if he gets it. And if he doesn't, it's a shameful, shameful thing. Talking of our guest, today we're joined by Juan Manuel Correa, a man who, as we know, was born in Ecuador in 1999 before testing his ability in the US, where he settled in Miami. He's competed and won the 2013 Rotax National Championship and became Rotax Junior World Champion in karts. He was scouted and recruited by the Lotus F1 team on their junior program and moved to Europe to pursue his dream just 14 years old. He went on to take part in Formula 3 and Formula 2 before a well-publicized cruel accident changed the course of his life and career. However, he's back doing what he does best and making his mark once again on the motorsport world. It's a pleasure to have him here. JM, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And please put Harry out of his misery. Chile, Colombia, Peru, which one does not border Ecuador?
Thank you, guys. It's Chile.
It is
Chile. Chile is way down south.
Exactly. Yeah. Chile is further south.
It is getting a bit... I've got every single question wrong so far what the team has interviewed. So it's not going well. I was thinking Peru, but I thought, oh no, they've got mountains as well. So that's probably... Yeah, no, okay. Well, we'll move swiftly on, shall we? JM, thank you for joining us. Where are you at the moment in the world?
I'm in Barcelona. This is my base for this year.
Yeah. Nice. And so... if we go back just to the very, very beginning to start off with and getting into motorsport, how did that come about? Was it there from a young age? Was it in the family, or did you just kind of discover it?
No, it was always there through my family. I have nobody in my family that ever was a professional driver, but from both my dad and mom's side, they were all, you know, into rally, motorcycles. Both my grandparents, they raced back in the day, you know, like local stuff. So we were always, you know, big fans of F1 and karting and everything. So I was kind of born with a bicycle and a motorcycle in my hands, pretty much. You know, there's videos of me at 4 years old driving around in a little 50cc motorcycle. So and Ecuador is a country where there's a lot of fans of F1, rally, you know, it's big over there. So I just kind of got into it. And then my dad got me into karting because he started to race rally for fun when he got older. And he met some people that were into the karting scene there. And I started like that. And at that stage, I was racing motorcycles before I started with motocross. But once I went into a go-kart, I never wanted to get back on the motorcycle and didn't want to get out of the go-kart. And I was pretty good at it since the beginning. So it just kind of took off from there.
And you were pretty good at it. And you decided to move. You went over to the States and started competing at a higher level. You won the Junior Rotax World Championship, as we said at the top of the show. You must be thinking at this point, actually, I'm not bad at this. Perhaps there's a career in it for me. Was that when it started becoming a bit more serious?
It definitely became more serious at that point, but in my mind, I was convinced I was going to be an F1 driver since I was 7, which was very naive, but I thought I was so good since the beginning, and I guess that helped me. You know, you need a lot of confidence in this sport. I won pretty much everything in Ecuador. Then we moved to Miami, actually for personal reasons, so it wasn't like we were chasing a career at that stage. But it definitely helped me because the level in the USA is much greater. There's a lot more opportunity. And then eventually I began winning everything in the USA as well. And that's the year when I won the national championship, the world championship, and I got recruited to go in Europe. And I would say that year, 2014, was really the start of, okay, now I'm really living, I'm not going to be living a normal life anymore. You know, I started to do homeschool. I was living by myself in Italy, and I was focused 100% on racing. Up until 2013, it was still like I was going to school normally, missing a lot of it. But I still kind of had a two lives in a way, but then it all changed.
I was going to say, how did you find that? Adapting to that, you know, the big, we've talked to a lot of drivers who make, you know, the big move to Europe, especially obviously you've come from America this time around, done well there, you've adapted there, then over to Europe, living on your own. That must have been quite difficult, especially with this whole lifestyle change suddenly thrust onto you.
Yeah, it was not easy. But I would say probably the racing part was the easiest, actually, because I got up to speed during the year and I became competitive quite quickly, and that was a positive. But the cultural side of it, the life part of it was not great. I mean, also my situation was not an easy one because I was so young that I couldn't have my own car. Like, I couldn't be independent, but I was living there by myself. So I had to move around with a bicycle. I didn't speak the language at the time. I had never been away from my family for so long, you know. So it was pretty depressing in the beginning. And I think the only thing that kind of kept me afloat was my love for racing and the fact that the racing side of it was going well and there was progress and I was really into it. So I just kind of lived with a personal side and I just, you know, focus on the racing and eventually, you know, I started to find my ground in Europe, not only racing, but living there. And now I've been living here in Europe on and off since 2014. Like, so I've spent in the last 10 years, I've spent more time in Europe than in America. So that's crazy.
Yeah, I think people forget, don't they, who perhaps don't have as much of a vested interest in motorsport, that how much you have to, especially young drivers, have to deal with off the track as well as, you know, performing on it. And they've got all this stuff that they just kind of leave at the door and then get into the car and kind of pretend that's not happening. So it's super difficult. But as you say, you were doing well on the track. And if we go fast forward perhaps to 2016, I think it was, in Italian F4, and you won that championship, right, with Prema. So a huge team, obviously, in junior categories. And you also then dovetailed that doing a bit of German F4 as well. And this was really, this seems like the moment where a lot of momentum is starting to build. You're going up the ladders, you know, almost sort of the road to Formula One. And as you said, this dream of becoming an F1 driver is starting to look, you know, not so naive anymore because you're on the road there.
Yeah. So then I made the switch into F4. I didn't win the championship. I might have won the rookies championship.
Oh, it might be the rookie. P2. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a pretty successful first year in cars. And then, you know how it is. It just started to, of course, look a bit more realistic. But at the same time, I started to mature a little bit and understand really how tough it is to get to F1 and all the factors that are into it. It's not just about, you know, how quick you are, how good you are. You have to be at the right moment, at the right place, in the right time, with the right team. So I started to also get to know this political side of racing and trying to manage that as well.
Absolutely. And it is a thing that is very prevalent, obviously, to this day. I suppose the relationship then with Sauber was a huge thing for you when that came around. How did that come about? And what did that start out as?
Yeah, so that arrived in 2019. I my first year in F2, and I was with Charus, which that year was named the Sauber Junior Team. So they had a separate deal with Sauber to name their team the junior team, and they got some benefits. And then on top of that, I was approached by Alfa Romeo, and they wanted me to be like a development driver. They wanted to follow me a bit, and they gave me an F1 test as well that year. So yeah, I mean, that was it was my first time being back involved with an F1 team since the Lotus junior team closed down in 2016. So that was nice. And I got my first F1 test, which was a dream come true. It was lovely. And then the next week, I had the crash in Spa, and everything just came to an abrupt end. So I feel like right now I'm trying to get back to where I was just before the crash and kind of retaking my career.
And for those of our listeners who don't know, and if you're not happy talking about this, obviously we won't, but that was a pivotal moment for you. And it's been the scene of many crashes, even in recent history. And you had a very severe accident. You fractured both your legs. I believe you had a minor spinal injury as well. You were airlifted to hospital for surgery before being transferred to London and placed in a coma after suffering acute respiratory failure. You were then taken out of your coma and work began on your legs when your lungs were strong enough to cope with the operation. And then you began your sort of, I guess, intense recovery process and amazingly completed your comeback in Formula 3. I mean, where to start with it? Did you ever think, first of all, that you would get back racing? How was your mindset once you all came around and were starting your rehab?
I always made it my goal to come back. And in the beginning, more than it being a realistic goal for me, it was just something to keep me out of depression and to keep me motivated in my recovery. You know, I kind of put that in my head. But you know, as the recovery went on, I started to get to know myself a bit better and get to know my injuries a little bit better. And once you start kind of improving little by little, I mean, the process was excruciatingly long and painful, but I started to believe, you know, that it would be possible. But again, I think it was also part of me just trying to be positive, because the doctors told me I was crazy. You know, my legs, especially the right leg, it should have been amputated. I mean, the doctors were recommending that we cut it off because the injuries were so bad. They told me, you know, we don't know if you'll ever be able to walk on it again. If even after all the surgeries, you know, something can go wrong and we might have to amputate it anyways. And if you do save the leg, the pain is going to be so bad for the rest of your life that, you know, you're going to have no quality of life. So it was not really great news, but I just kept going through it, you know, and putting in a lot of work, much more than the doctors were recommending. So I always went kind of over the top. And actually, my biggest risk was not to go too much, you know, too much rehab and refracture something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I just, you know, my life stopped completely from one day to another. And I put all the energy and effort that I was putting into racing, I just put it into my legs and getting back as a person, you know, not just driving, but trying to walk again and everything.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been doing.
That first race back with Formula 3, you've made it back to an incredibly tough championship, a fast car, and you're under, you know, the watch of the Formula One paddock once again. What was that like to sit on the grid ready to go back for your first race post-recovery, post-injury?
It was nerve-wracking, you know. It was nerve-wracking because when you've been out of it for so long, you feel like a complete rookie, you know. It's not natural anymore. But it was also nerve-wracking because of the accident, you know, to get back in a car. The first time I drove a car in testing was not bad. You know, people and the doctors and the psychologists were thinking, oh, I might start getting flashbacks. But no, I never had any problems like that. But the first race, it was like, okay, this is real. You know, like, we're going to be racing. There can be crashes again. Like, I need to get it together. And, you know, I just tried to calm myself down and got through it. It was tough, not mentally, but physically as well. It was really tough. And at that stage, you know, the first race we did this year in Barcelona, I was still walking around with crutches, you know, when I was racing. It was crazy. And I have still medals all over my legs. You know, an accident right now for me could mean disaster for my legs, because when you have medals in your legs, it's very risky. So it's all part of the things I've been having to deal the whole year. I couldn't use the normal brake pump up until two races ago because I couldn't do the brake pressure. So we made all kinds of adjustments to the brake pedal and the pumps. And, you know, I was just kind of hanging on for dear life during the first part of the season. and always chasing, you know, because it's a very competitive championship. The guys here that are at the top, they're top drivers. It's been a big challenge, but I've enjoyed it.
How's the mental part of it? I mean, you know, you look at other cases, other crashes and incidents like Billy Munger, who's, you know, come back and excelled. It's changed the course of his life, but he's managed to keep it together. Did you go through any difficult patches mentally? And I'm interested in this area for a number of reasons. I mean, we did a podcast with a guy who owns a mental health charity, a guy called Lewis Warren in the UK. And it's an automotive charity that supports mainly men, but women as well, through challenging mental health issues. And we're hoping to do an event soon with Movember, the charity, to do a Motormouth event with them that's focusing on mental health.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including track tours, pit lane walks, VIP hospitality, and loads more. It really is the closest you can get to Formula One, and thanks to F1 Experiences, you can return to the track this year, and Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experiences package by using the code Motormouth when booking online at f1experiences.com.
It's an interesting subject. It's an important subject. Did you struggle mentally, or have you managed to keep strong in that regard?
No, I struggled for sure. I would say that the toughest part was in the beginning to accept what had happened. You know, when I came out of the coma, they had to tell me again everything that had gone down, the fact that Antoine had died in the accident.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How serious the situation with my legs were. You know, basically, when I came out of the coma, they told me, you will never be... Forget about the Juan Manuel you knew. You will never be the same. You're never going to drive again. We don't know if you're going to walk again. We don't know if you'll have your leg by this time next week. So just, you know, don't get your hopes up and just accept what's happening, you know. And I was like, that's a lot to take in one day.
Huge.
So that was tough. And then slowly, I just stopped kind of thinking about the future, and I just started to take it one day at a time. The first thing I wanted to do was get out of that hospital. I was in the hospital for over 2 months. You know, it was horrible.
Yeah.
And then I went back to Miami to start the process and keep doing the surgeries and the whole recovery. And then I would say that was just as tough as, or even tougher, because you go out of the hospital environment where you're like in this little bubble, you know? So yeah, you're crippled in a bed with your legs full of metals, but everything there is made to make you feel comfortable, and you don't have to interact with anybody except your family or whoever is visiting you. You know, you don't see really what glimpses of what your life will be like after that. And when I got to Miami, I could not be independent. I was in a wheelchair, you know, and that was probably even tougher, because everyone just goes on with their life. You know, the world keeps spinning, and you're there in your wheelchair, not knowing what's going to happen with you. So, I was pretty depressed for a few weeks, few months. I decided to come off the pain medication, because that was messing, you know, the opioids. I was on very heavy opioids, yeah. And that was messing with my head. You know, I felt super depressed all the time. I didn't feel like myself. But I think there was always something inside of me that just kind of kept me going. You know, I never let myself go down too deep into that hole. And eventually the progress started to come. The surgeries went on, you know, for a long time, I was kind of like in cruise control, just working my ass off and not really, I didn't want to think or talk about it. I was just working. And that was kind of my way of distracting myself. And eventually some progress started to arrive. There were like little glimpses of hope. They took the metals off my legs. I could stand up for the first time on both my feet. And that's just kind of the way I've taken it, you know, little by little, but it has been tough. It has been really tough.
It's a testament to how strong you are mentally and physically. It really is quite remarkable. And to be back on the grid and racing it, and not just, you know, you're mixing it with them all. It's not like you're at the back of the pack either in Formula 3. You're very much in the hunt every single time as well, which must have been a huge boost to you as well, because as I'm sure we're all aware, there's still, you know, a long way to go, especially if you've only had these aids taken off the car as well in the last couple of rounds. But how have you felt the season's gone in general?
The season has been results wise a bit up and down, which has been strange because the progress has been constantly better on from my side. But we've had a couple of rounds in the middle where I did a couple mistakes. A new track in Zandvoort was not easy for me. So it's been a bit all over the place. But in general, I would say the first half of the season was a bit like I expected it. And at some stage, you know, in France, I was fighting inside the top 10 on the three races. And that was even unexpected. We were not expecting it to go that well. And on the other side, now the last race in Spa and in Zandvoort was worse than we expected it. And the pace we have is much higher than to be fighting for P20, P15. So that's a bit frustrating. But I mean, I've seen this year the whole time as kind of a transition year. I was never here to fight for the championship. Yeah. That was not even close to being possible. And like I said, the progress has been clear. And the team can see it also from behind the scenes. There's a lot more than just the results. Mm. And more than anything, my feeling inside the car has been improving a lot, especially the last few rounds since we took all the aids off. I'm starting to see little glimpses of the old JM, which is really encouraging. And I think, you know, right now my focus is to finish off strong in Sochi, not results-wise, just keep improving myself and feeling better. And do a better prep for next year.
There's no other words for it. It is just incredible. And what's also remarkable, James, is that you've been quite vocal about safety in motorsport throughout the entire time as well, and particularly in relation, of course, to Radiano Rouge at Spa-Francorchamps. We saw incidents so recently there in F1 with Lando Norris, the W Series pileup as well, and GTs with Jack Aitken and a number of GT drivers having a huge collision there at the top of the hill. Do you feel like your voice is being heard there, and what do you want to change in respect to that specific part of the track? And also, can that be taken and used for other tracks as well? Because at the moment, it seems like it's just a Spa thing, but actually, can it be seen in other places as well?
I think there's always improvements that we can make in other places and in the cars themselves. If you see the pictures of my car after the crash, it is quite shocking the way it broke, and you know, that's for sure can be an improvement. And I still haven't been allowed to understand why it broke that way. So the FIA have been very close about the whole situation. Yeah. But yeah, I have been vocal because I feel like at least, you know, we had this tragedy. Another driver died. I am permanently disabled for the rest of my life due to that accident. So at least let's make it be worth it in the way that let's make changes, you know, let's make sure that doesn't happen again. And so far there hasn't been a change. So answering your question, I don't particularly feel that my voice has been heard, because I've been saying this since 2 years ago already. At first internally, there was no response. And now, of course, you see the accidents and social media. And unfortunately, it seems that a crash in F1 without any serious damage to anyone will create more change than a fatal crash in F2,
yeah.
Which for me is a bit, it shouldn't be that way. Hopefully at least it changes. In this case, I do think there has to be some changes done to the corner, not to the actual layout. You know, I think they can just change the barriers, cave the track inwards to allow for more room in case a car crashes. And the corner does not have to change. It is a fantastic corner. You know, going through that corner, there's no feeling like that in the world. And fans love it. It's iconic. But, it's a sport where there's a lot of money involved. And I'm sure if they really wanted to, they can change the track and make it a bit safer. So the question is when?
Yeah. Well, keep being vocal. Hearing you speak, I don't know whether you sort of take notice or take it in, but it's very inspiring hearing someone like you speak because of what you've been through. But you articulate it very well. So keep being vocal and you know, we'll do our small bit in our tiny part of the motorsport universe to try and support you and amplify you wherever we can. But let's look to the future.
Thank
you. You're back in the seat. You're doing what you do best. What is the plan now? Has anything changed in the grand plan? Is F1 still the goal?
I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it. I would love still to go to F1. But we have to see. This accident and this life experience has really changed my perspective in the way that before I was looking at racing like I think most other drivers in F2 and F3 were. It's either F1 or nothing, you know, and that's all there is to life. And now I've learned that there's a lot more to life than just being an F1 driver. And there's a lot of other categories where you can have a great career and have just as much fun and enjoyment. So we have to see what's best. You know, if it's still realistic to go to F1, we will pursue that. If I am able to find the budget, the support, I will pursue that. But if not, I'm not going to be one of those drivers that is staying in Formula 2 until he's 25 years old, hoping for a miracle. You know, for me, I'm not going to wait for a miracle, and I'm going to do what's best in the general sense. So yeah. We will see. For next year, I would probably like to go to F2. We're looking at options right now. Because anyway, I think I still need to go back to that category to keep learning and get back to 100%. I think I still need one more full season to really be back at the level I was before. And what better category than F2? It's probably one of the most competitive categories in the world. So, and I already know the tracks, I know the teams, you know, I'm in that environment and that's an advantage. So we're looking at options at the moment, but nothing is it's a bit too early right now to really have anything confirmed.
Yeah, yeah. Steve Ritt still rebuilding. Who is the best driver you've ever shared a track with?
that's a tough one. That I've ever shared a track with. I mean, I've shared tracks with really good people. George Russell. Really impressive. What else do you have? Antoine in his F2 in 2019, F2. He was really impressive that year. I don't think I've shared the track with Charles or Alex Albon.
So you're not surprised?
Max neither.
Not surprised by George's success then?
No. He's been really impressive since karting. I only raced with him 1 year because he was always like a couple of years ahead of me. But I have seen him, you know, I remember when I was doing karting in USA, he was winning everything here in Europe. And then he went to F3. He had a couple of tough years in F3 with not such good teams. And it seemed like his career to F1 was kind of over. And then he got an opportunity to be with Mercedes in GP3 with ART, and he won the championship in the first year, and then the F2, he won it on the first year. So not surprised at all. I think there's a lot of young talents now coming up that I have raced against, and that are, you see these guys going into F1 and immediately being up there with the big boys, you know, and I think that just kind of shows the level that we have nowadays in the junior categories.
motorsport can change very quickly, as we well know. Is there anything you would have done differently coming up through, you know, through the ranks in your career so far, if you could go back?
Yes, there's always things you can do differently. I don't regret it. I think one thing is to be regretful or to want to change it. But, you know, there's always, you know, oh, that might have been a better team for that year, or I should have stayed one more year in this category and not gone up. But it's all super subjective. You know, I think for the opportunities I had in the places where I was at that moment, we did the best we had. And, you know, we managed to still have and go pretty far, you know. So yeah. I think overall I had already a pretty good career.
Now, we've amazingly covered half an hour in the blink of an eye. So we're already coming towards the end. But we have a final three questions, which we ask all of our guests, and they throw up different answers. They're brought to us by our friends over at F1 Experiences. Harry, do you want to kick off with the first one?
Yes, JM, what's got you excited at the moment?
At the moment, number one, Russia. So we have Sochi next week. And I did the prep at the sim yesterday with the team, and kind of all my focus is there. And then I would say the second major thing is next year. You know, at this time we're discussing with teams, seeing where I'm going to be living, you know, kind of what my life is going to look like. And that's always exciting, but very stressful as well. And finally, I'm excited to go back to Miami, hopefully soon once the season is over. I haven't been there in months and I haven't been seeing my family so much this year. So I'm looking forward to that.
Good stuff.
That'll be amazing.
Second one for you. What are you scared of?
I will tell you something funny. My most common nightmare. This is a true story. My most common nightmare. I had one the night before the Sandberg race 2 weeks ago, and it is always the same. I am getting ready for the race, and for some reason, I'm very late. All the cars are on the grid about to go, and I don't manage to get my suit and my kit on in time for the race, and the race starts without me. And every time it happens, I wake up sweating and screaming. So I think that's probably like my biggest nightmare ever. And it's something, I don't know why. I'm sure there's some meaning behind that, but I hate being late. And I would hate to miss a race. So there's something behind
there. We need to find, that needs a psychologist to dissect and find out what's going on inside your brain.
Well, oh God, I can imagine. Yeah, the sweat's going through there as well and suddenly wake it up. Got a final question for you then, JM. What is your favorite racing destination?
I really enjoy Abu Dhabi, like the end of the year when we were doing GP3 and F2. I really enjoyed Monaco. That was nice. And Vegas. When I was doing karting, we used to do the Super Nationals in Vegas. That was pretty cool.
Oh, cool.
We go to some cool places, but I think those are my top three because, I mean, Abu Dhabi mainly because there's the end of the year party and everyone's kind of like in a good mood. Monaco, it's Monaco. It's something special. And the same with Vegas.
Yeah, no, Vegas, brilliant city. Love it. I totally agree on Abu Dhabi. Not the best track necessarily in the world, but the facility is amazing.
Yeah, I'm not talking tracks.
No, I'm not talking tracks.
And I think Miami is going to be amazing next year.
Oh, yes. I bet you're buzzing for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, even if I don't, hopefully they will put F2 and I will be in F2 and race there. That would be amazing. But even not, I'm going to be there 100% because I've been hearing they're going to build like a marina around the stadium and they're going to park like mega yachts. I mean, they're going all out, man. It's going to be crazy.
And hopefully it does some good for Formula One in the States. I mean, I know we've got the Austin Grand Prix and that's all heading in the right direction, but we still need more US talent in Formula One. There is, you know, it seems unbelievable when you have the Haas F1 team and we don't have a US driver treading the boards week in, week out, when there's so much talent out there. I'm a massive IndyCar fan and there is so much American talent that is available. It seems crazy that it's not being utilized. Anyway, that's a discussion for another day. I also wanted to quiz you on Ecuador. What's it like? Should we be going on holiday to Ecuador?
For sure. Ecuador's amazing.
Yeah. Do you get to go?
No, really. It's.
Do you go back?
Yeah. Like, I go back probably twice a year. Like, always New Year and Christmas, I'm there. And then sometime in the rest of the year, I escape for a week or two. But my family, they're there 4 or 5 times a year. We still have an apartment there. My whole family, like grandparents, cousins, are there. And it, honestly, it's one of the most beautiful countries in the world, I am sure. We have the mountains in the middle. So you can, you know, go to the mountains. Like you said, Chimborazo is closer to the sun than Everest.
Yeah.
We also have Cotopaxi, which is the highest active volcano in the world. Yeah. We have some crazy stuff. And then you have the coast on one side. We have the Galapagos Islands. I'm sure you've heard of them. They are absolutely crazy, incredible. And then on the other side, we have the Amazon. So we have anything you can dream of. We have in Ecuador. We have great food. The people are nice.
So
is
the Galapagos Islands, is that part of the Ecuadorian area?
Yeah.
I didn't know
it's
that.
Ecuador.
That's terrible. Wow. I should have known that. Yeah. I should have found that in my research. Yeah. He's got an apartment there. We can go and help. We'll just turn up. Hello.
Yeah. Yeah, you can come over.
Listen, JM, thank you for joining us on the show. All too brief, but fascinating talking to you. Your story is inspiring. It's amazing. It's great to see that you're following through with all this stuff with the FIA and the safety measures. It's amazing to hear from someone who's been through all that trauma, has come out the other side, and is proving a success again, despite doctors and others telling you that it can't be done. So a hugely, hugely inspiring story. Thank you for sharing it with us and being so open. And hopefully it can help some of our listeners as well. But for now, Manuel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, guys. It was my pleasure and it was a fun one. I appreciate it.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages, which include the best race tickets, first class hotels, travel and exclusive behind the scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend. F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com. And if you enter code Motormouth, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too. So make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Getting caught in the wrong shoes can interrupt your plans for the day. Like when that 10% chance of rain ends up looking more like 100%. When the transition to fall and winter feels more like experiencing every season on the same day, there's the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Cross off errands with the splash protection on the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with all-conditioned traction and reflective details on the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Or upgrade to next-level protection with the Mudguard on the Wool Runner Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. allbirds.com, code FRESHSOCKS.